Welcome to Monterey Bay This Week from KAZU News. It's Saturday, January 31st. I'm Elena Neal Sachs. The Central Coast Water Board has rejected Vistra's plans for assessing surface water and groundwater contamination from its battery fire in Moss Landing last year. Vistra submitted its work plans in response to investigative orders from the Water Board last spring. But in letters to Vistra on Wednesday, the Water Board called both plans incomplete. Among other critiques, the agency said Vistra's sampling plans rely on a boundary that's too narrow. They say it should be expanded to include all areas where metal deposits from the fire were found. The Water Board also said Vistra's groundwater monitoring plan needed to test for a wider range of toxic compounds. Monterey County Communications Director Nick Pasculi says now it's up to Vistra to address the concerns.
I think it's reasonable to say that we would support the raising of those concerns and wanting to get better answers.
Vistra has until February 27th to revise its groundwater monitoring plan and until March 10th to revise its surface water plan. A Vistra representative said the company is still reviewing the letters and is not yet able to comment. On Friday, people in Santa Cruz joined the national shutdown. KAZU's Amy Mayer has more.
The idea is to collectively protest immigration and customs enforcement activity. Santa Cruz High School student Ren Harmon walked out with many classmates.
The line was like four people wide, and we made it five blocks, and there were still people walking down from the steps.
They merged with other protesters, including families with young children, at the downtown Santa Cruz clock tower.
A lot of this week's news centered around resistance to escalating ICE operations around the country. KAZU's Aaron Malsbury was at a press conference Thursday where Central Coast Democrat Jimmy Panetta outlined plans to reform the agency.
Congressman Jimmy Panetta says local law enforcement and organizations will work together to protect the community from unlawful activity, even if that activity comes from federal agents like Immigration and Customs Enforcement. At a press briefing yesterday in Santa Cruz, he said Democrats in Congress are pushing to reform how ICE and Border Patrol operate.
You're not going to wear masks. You're going to properly identify. You're going to wear body cams. There's going to be independent investigations. You're not going to search homes without a judicial warrant when it comes to actually doing your job. You're going to be properly trained.
Local leaders from law enforcement, schools, housing, and food banks also committed to supporting the community regardless of immigration status. And this week, the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors created a committee to support immigrant residents and protect locations like schools and hospitals in the event of increased ICE presence.
Earlier this week in Monterey County, a Board of Supervisors meeting got heated. The Monterey County Sheriff's Office gave a report Tuesday on federal immigration agents' access to the county jail.
In 2025, Monterey County Jail booked 9,252 individuals into custody. Of those, only 21 individuals were released to ICE under the narrow exemptions allowed by state law.
Those exemptions are primarily for people convicted of violent crimes, but 8 of the 21 people released to ICE last year had not been convicted at the time of their transfer. Supervisor Kate Daniels, echoing similar comments from residents, fiercely criticized those transfers, saying they undermine due process.
They're essentially saying that the federal government is going to do a better job than we are in Monterey County keeping our communities safe.
Supervisors and public commenters were united in their searing rebuke of ICE tactics in Minneapolis and elsewhere. And, inspired by organizing efforts in cities facing a heightened ICE presence, local advocates have been planning ongoing events to assemble and distribute thousands of whistle kits. KAZU's Katie Brown reports.
Indivisible Salinas organized Monday's WhistleMania event.
Whistles are being used across the country because they're a low-tech, high-impact way to alert your neighbors when immigration enforcement folks are seen.
That's Megan Wilden. She leads communications for Indivisible Monterey.
We're very concerned about protecting people from ICE overreach and abuse and so forth.
Wilden's chapter is partnering with outside organizations to get whistle kits to immigrant communities.
Our very first partnership was with the Japanese American Citizens League, because they have a very strong memory of what it's like to be unfairly detained by their own government.
Indivisible Monterey is also hosting an event at Monterey Peninsula College this Saturday to share information about how people can organize their own WhistleMania events.
When so many of us are feeling very distraught about what's happening in Minnesota, it's a great way to feel like you're really doing something to help.
This week, droves of volunteers took to the streets to count the number of people experiencing homelessness. Erin has more on that.
This point in time count is federally mandated and informs policy and funding decisions. Cheryl Norte has been leading the Santa Cruz County count for 5 years and says the community engagement gives her hope.
This will strengthen the data and help move people into housing faster, because better data means better information, better access to funding, better advocacy, all of that.
She says the count is especially important right now as federal cuts and funding uncertainty make planning more difficult.
We also got a bit of good news from Santa Cruz earlier this week. Santa Cruz Harbor businesses may start getting some relief from the effects of the Murray Street Bridge closure. One eastbound-only lane is now open to cars and bikes. Michael Spadafora owns Java Junction, which has locations on both sides of the bridge, at the harbor and in Seabright. He hopes the partial reopening will help the harbor side.
We're going to need alternating traffic, though, to really improve the Seabright neighborhood.
He and other Seabright business owners have seen a significant drop in sales since the bridge first closed last spring.
You need the people from the west side to get down to the harbor, and we need the people from Pleasure Point to be able to get to Seabright.
But even if alternating traffic does come back temporarily, another full bridge closure is scheduled for June through mid-September. To wrap things up, KAZU's Amy Mayer interviews Ava Homa, a local Kurdish-Iranian writer, about the latest state repression in Iran.
A weeks-long violent crackdown on protesters in Iran has eased, though dissent no doubt remains, and internet blackout has made it hard to know exactly what's happening. Still, the recent clashes drew international attention, again, to the harsh realities for Iranians. Cal State Monterey Bay lecturer and writer Ava Homa still has family in Iran. She spoke only briefly with them during the protests, then with one relative who returned to the United States from Tehran.
They have been a part of almost every uprising for the past couple decades, so they were very shocked by both the large number of people that attended the protests as well as the type of background. You would usually see younger, politically active people on the streets. This time he witnessed families with grandparents and young children and even a visibly pregnant woman. So that was one of the main things that he pointed out. It was as if for a second, both people were stunned by the large population as well as the government itself, because this last uprising was a response to a call by the son of the former king of Iran. And people haven't been really responding to that call because a large population are against bringing monarchy back, considering it a step backwards. However, the situation has become so dire just in the past couple of years, with the economy getting more unstable and with the pressure that Iranian government put on its place after Israel's attack on Iran, that it has created a depth of exhaustion and desperation where people are changing what they're asking for, because obviously in times of crisis, relief is the first thing that we reach for.
How has observing the situation from your position here in the U.S. been different this time compared to what you've witnessed from abroad in other times?
I understand that as an exiled writer, my safety here is both a privilege as well as a responsibility, and I have trying to do my best to amplify the voices of people within Iran without judgment or imposing my own political ideologies on them. For example, I am very much scared by this call for foreign intervention and the return of monarchy. I consider it as this short-term solution can in the long run reproduce oppression by creating these national hierarchies and ethnic hierarchies that the king of Iran imposed. However, being here, I try to faithfully amplify their voices regardless of what my beliefs are. And I have noticed that as a Kurdish Iranian woman, it matters to me how women respond and react in each process. It matters to me how ethnic groups respond to each process. So I try to make sure it's clear that, you know, the way Kurds responded to previous uprising is different, because Kurds and other ethnic groups are more afraid of my monarchy than the Persians are, which is why this time you see a larger population taking to streets in big cities like Mashhad or Tehran versus more regional and marginalized ethnic groups that tend to live on the border between Iran and other countries. So there is a lot of complexity and nuance that I have to deal with constantly. The other thing that has changed is the causes or the slogans. So initially, people came to the street asking for freedom and dignity. But this time, with the economy, with the Iranian currency being so incredibly devalued, and once stable middle-class families are now struggling to feed their children. So this economic grievance has created a universal response among different classes, but not among different ethnic groups.
What would you like to leave people with?
I think it's very important for us to remember that what is happening in Iran is part of the global patterns, and how we respond to oppression in Minnesota, in Gaza, in Ukraine, they're all reconnected. And but basically how we respond to oppression anywhere sets the precedent for what unfolds.
Ava Homa is a writer and CSUMB lecturer. Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for making space for this.
And a note, CSUMB holds the broadcast license for KAZU. This episode was produced by me, Elena Neal Sachs. It was reported by me, Katie Brown, Aaron Malsbury, and Amy Mayer. Amy is our editor and news director. That's it for Monterey Bay this week. We'll be back with more local news next week.